Thanks so much for joining us today. We'd love to know how much this ministry is touching your life. Please take a moment and email us your story at stories@transformationchurch.net. Also, if you would like to help support this ministry financially, you can do so by visiting us at transformationchurch.net, clicking on the Giving tab, and choosing the giving option that best works for you. Thanks again for joining us. We hope you enjoy today's message.
Yes, so excited to be with you today. Want to welcome everybody in person. Come on, give it up for yourselves. And online, we've got people watching not only in New York, we've got people watching in Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, even in Puerto Rico. So wherever you're watching, let us know. Put it in the comments. That's why it's so important to share the live stream so that we can reach as many people as possible. I'm so grateful that you're here today. We're not doing the song because of the sake of time. We're really short on time today, so we're going to go right into the message. But before I do, I'm really, really excited for next week. Next week, we're beginning a brand new sermon series called The Secret Sauce. When it comes to food, how many know it's all about the sauce? How many knows all about the sauce? I love sauce. I love all kinds of sauce. I love barbecue sauce. I love hot sauce. I love steak sauce. We're going to talk about the secret sauce and what makes us special, what sets us apart as followers of Jesus. That starts next week. Also next week, we're doing communion. So if you're watching online on our online campus, you know, make plans to join us for communion. And if you could believe it, next week, Ruth and I celebrate 12 years here at Transformation Church. Can you believe that? What? I can't believe it. It was May 3rd, 2009. 51 people were in attendance, and they gave us the nod that they wanted us to be their pastor. Such an honor to pastor this church. I am honored to be your pastor. Do you guys know that? This is the greatest privilege of my life, to give our lives, over a decade of our lives, to you, to this area, to this region. We just love you, and we believe the best is yet to come. You know, this setback of COVID was a setback, but how many know God, and for every setback, God sets us up for a comeback, right? We're coming back from this. You're coming back from this. Do you believe that? Do you believe you're coming back? For every setback, God plans your comeback. I know 2020 had a lot of setbacks, all kinds of setbacks. And maybe your 2021 started with some setbacks. But regardless of your setback, whenever you experience one, just know that God plans for you to come back. And that's been the heart of this series. In week one, we talked about the ultimate comeback, Jesus rising again from the dead after 3 days. And if Jesus came back, how many know you can come back? Because the same spirit that raised Jesus from the dead lives in you. Oh, I need some help this morning, church. Some of y'all are like, help this preacher out. I forgot what I was supposed to say next. Okay. Got all into it. So, ultimate cut, week two. My wife nailed it with the topic, when fear sets you back. Last week, Pastor Glenn talked about coming back from bad decisions. And this week, you guys ready for this week? It's going to be a tough one. Coming back when others set you back. Coming back when others set you back. Have you ever experienced a relational setback? Or am I the only one in the room that has ever experienced a relational setback? When someone that you thought was your friend, someone that you thought loved you, or someone that you were close to set you back, they offended you, they hurt you, they harmed you, they talked about you. Or maybe the setback was from something you expected from them to do in your life. Maybe the setback came because you expected them to do something or to be a different type of person. Listen, the truth is we all experience relational setbacks in our lives. We all go through life and experience the pain and the hurt from cutoffs, from unfriending on social media. You ever been unfriended? Maybe I should have said that. You ever been unfriended? Or what about more severe? Blocked? Wait, they blocked me? I cannot believe this. I thought they were my friend. And you're all mad because you couldn't block them first. You're like, shoot, I would have blocked them first. If I would have known they blocked me, I would have blocked them. Ain't talking to them no more. And then when you bump into them on the road or you see them at Hannaford, you turn the other way. We've all been through some sort of relational setback, and the problem is if we don't learn how to navigate through that setback, we will remain in that setback, and that setback will cripple us and keep us from moving forward into our divine destiny. That setback will keep us from experiencing all that God wants for us. That setback will even affect how we do life and have relationships with other people. Because some of us are guarded. Some of us are afraid to open up our hearts to people because we've been hurt in the past. So the question is, what do you do when others set you back? I'll share this story with you. I grew up in New York City. I grew up in the Bronx. I grew up on an apartment building. I know the address, 1760 Bruckner Boulevard, Bronx, New York, 10473. 212-328-9299, apartment 9C. That was my apartment. And I spent most of my young life there as a child growing up. And my mom used to let us go out, but we only could go as far as she was able to see us. So there was this one street corner, and there was a mailbox, and I had to stay within the corner of the mailbox all summer long, riding my bike back and forth, back and forth. I didn't want to come in, so I was there from 9 in the morning till 5 p.m. riding my bike. I used every crack as a ramp. Every crack in the sidewalk was a ramp. Anything I could find. I got myself in trouble throwing rocks and all kinds of things, and so every once in a while, my friends would come out. We would ride together. We used to think we were like Chips. I don't know if this is for the old folk. Anybody over 40 knows Chips? Yeah, all you old people, like, do I have just old people in the church? Like me? Anybody old like me? I know Chips. I'm sorry. Eric Estrada. Anybody know Eric Estrada? Ponch. Everybody wanted to be Ponch. There's me trying to be Ponch. Really cool. You know, just riding my bike. And one day my friends, we would be riding, and then he said, hey, let's switch bikes. I said, cool. So we switched bikes, and as I was riding, someone came up from behind and pushed me off the bike and got on. I'm like, oh, this must be another friend that I don't know. And he said, thanks, and he rode away with my friend's bike. I said, bro, it sucks to be you, bro. They stole your bike. He said, but you were on it. I said, I didn't know who that was. Give me my bike back. But it got me nervous because I'm like, oh, my goodness, he stole his bike. So we went looking for it, and that was long gone. Anyway, ways later, I had my little brother. A few months maybe went by, and I had my little brother. He was riding bike. I was inside at the park, and he comes crying. I'll never forget. Dad, I'm not dead. He said, Joe, they stole my bike. I said, what? I got on my bike, and I chased them down. And I grabbed it. I said, give me my brother's bike. They said, no, they hit them. They all were running. And then I got to the end of the other block, and they saw it was five of them and one of me. And they're like, wait a second. Why are we running? I'll never forget. They took out this huge knife. It was like a machete. Maybe it looked like a machete to me because I was only 10 years old, but it looked like a machete. It was like, ring. And they're like, steal his bike too. And I was like, oh, no, that's not happening. So I said, I'm out of here. And I got him, and I just jetted out of there. But that instance as a child puts a fear in you. It puts this fear to maybe ride bike or not just ride bike. It puts a fear to trust people. Because from that moment on, I can remember being very cautious and suspicious and skeptical and uncertain. I remember seeing people on the block and having to, I'm going a different direction because I didn't want to be harmed. And I wonder how many people in life struggle to form new relationships or keep old relationships because of the trauma of their past, or maybe something was stolen from them, or maybe something was stolen from you in a relationship, and you're afraid to trust people because of the traumatic experiences you've had in your life. And you go through life crippled. You go through life crippled emotionally, crippled mentally, crippled spiritually, and you don't even realize it. You're hurt, and you feel offended, and you go through life crippled. And if I were to guess, there are some people in this room that don't even realize they've been crippled from a traumatic experience they've had in their past. They don't even realize that the hurt, the offense, they're reliving in their lives over and over again, and they're unable to move forward to what God has for them because they're going through life with crutches. I'm here to tell you that whatever setback you've experienced relationally, others may set you back, but just know that God will always plan your comeback. Others might set you back, but God will always, always bring you back. Always will bring you back. Others may set you back, but God will always bring you back. And I'm not talking about bringing the relationship back. Because for some of you, you're grieving, you're mourning, you're in this space, I want that relationship back, I wish we had that relationship back. And you go through that experience in life and you're wondering if this is gonna, you know, I just want them to say I'm sorry, I want my relationship restored with them. And you know what I've learned? That a lot of times in life, the relationship will not be brought back, but God will bring you back. Yes. Yes. God will bring you back stronger. He'll bring you back healthier. He'll bring you back more secure and smarter. You see, in Scripture, there was a boy who experienced an incredible setback in his life. We read in 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4. His name is, say it with me. Yeah, that's what I thought. His name is Say it with me. His name is? Wow. If you could only hear in online what's happening in person. All right, let's try it again. One, two, okay. His name is? Oh, my Lord. Let's do it together. I'll say it first. Mephibosheth. Good. Now say it quick. Oh, let's keep going. So Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son. His grandfather was King Saul. You may not know who King Saul was. He was the very first king of Israel. He was established by God. So there's Mephibosheth. And it says that he was crippled as a child. He was 5 years old when the report came from Jezreel, and Saul and Jonathan, what happened? They'd been killed in battle. His father and his grandfather were killed. When the child's nurse heard the news, she picked them up and fled. But as she hurried away, she dropped him. And he became crippled from that day forward. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything wrong in life. He's an innocent five-year-old boy, but he was dropped and became crippled in both of his feet. Let me ask you, have you ever been dropped relationally? Have you ever been dropped by someone in your life? Have you ever been dropped as a child? I'm not talking physically. I'm talking emotionally, maybe physically, spiritually. You ever been dropped? And that pain, the trauma of that drop has caused you to become crippled like Mephibosheth? You ever experienced relational pain that has crippled you from even having new friendships, crippled you from moving forward into your divine destiny, crippled you from just being happy in life. So many of you can't even walk through life because you're lame emotionally. And for so many of you, this is, you walked into church like this. I'm not talking physically, I'm talking emotionally. And you're not the only one that's been crippled in life by someone dropping you. I know many years ago, I had someone very close to me drop me. And I'm not talking dropping me on Facebook. I'm talking about dropping me in life. And almost like they cut you off. Isn't that painful? When they cut you off, you think they're so close to you. You think that they love you. You've done so much for these individuals, right? And those are the people that hurt you most are the people you're closest to. Their family, close friends, people you grow up with, people you've done life with. And they hurt you, and they offend you, and now you're doing life in crutches, and you don't even realize it. See, what I've learned is some of the most crippling experiences in life have come from crippling relational setbacks from others. Let me say that again. Won't you put that out for me? Some of the most crippling experiences of life come from a crippling relational setback from others. Is that true for you as it has been for me? One of the hardest things for me to overcome is when I've been experienced a relational setback. I take it personal. How about you? I take it to heart. It goes deep. Maybe it's the pastor's heart of me, the shepherd's heart. I don't know. Y'all have shepherd's heart too, and I know it affects you too. And there's two ways we can deal with it. We can just ignore it. We can walk away from it, or we can stuff it down into our soul, and hopefully one day we'll get over it. And that's what happened to me. I just stuffed it down in my soul. Oh, one day I'll get over it. And I never got over it. It crippled me. And there I am, doing ministry with crutches. So Mephibosheth, he was dropped, he was sent to a place called Lodabar. Lodabar, in the Old Testament, names have incredible significance. And Lodabar means, in the Hebrew, means no pasture, no word, no communication, or no thing. And that's what a relational setback can do to you. It can put you in a place called Lodabar, a place of darkness, a place where there's no pasture, a place called no thing, nothing, Bill. And there is Mephibosheth. As a five-year-old boy, can't play like his friends could play. Then he grows up into a young man, and he probably didn't have these cool aluminum crutches. He probably had something in wood, and he's just dragging himself through life because of what someone else did to him. And I can't help to think that there's some of you just dragging yourself to life, stuck in Lodabar because you've allowed yourself to remain in that setback. Let me remind you, for every setback, God plans a comeback. And there is no relational setback that you cannot overcome without God's help. There is nothing you cannot overcome. For the same spirit that raised Jesus from the dead lives in you. And I know it's tough, and I know it's hard, and I know what you're thinking, Pastor, but you don't know what they did to me. You don't know, Pastor, how they've hurt me. You don't know how they abused me. You don't know how they've done it physically. I'll never get out of Lodabar. And I'm here to declare to you today, yes, you can, and yes, you will. Because for every setback, God plans a comeback, and you're going to come back from that relational setback in your life. After many years, David assumes the throne. He's the king now. David is the king, and he's ruling, and he's reigning, and everything is amazing. He's conquering kingdoms, and he's sitting in the palace, and a thought comes to his mind, and he asks himself, I wonder if there is anyone who's still alive from Saul's household. So there was one servant that lived in the household. His, I think his name was Ziba, or she. I just had this moment. Maybe he or she, but it was Ziba. And he called, the King David called for Ziba and asked this question. We find it in 2 Samuel chapter 9. The king asked, the king asked him, is anyone still alive from Saul's family? Because if so, I want to show God's kindness to them. First of all, whatever setback you've experienced, whatever disappointment, whatever hurt, whatever pain, whatever disconnection, whatever cutoff, I'm here to tell you that God still wants to show kindness to you. God is a kind God. He wants to show kindness to you. So Ziba replies and says, yeah, one of Jonathan's sons is still alive. He's crippled in both feet. Why is that important? Because crippled individuals were a sign of being cursed, never allowed in the palace. But even though Ziba was crippled living in Lodabar, somebody knew where he was. And I'm here to tell you today that you might feel alone, but you're not alone. You might think that nobody understands what you're going through, but God understands. And you may not believe that anybody knows where you're at, but I'm here to tell you God knows exactly where you're at. He knows exactly what you're going through. He knows the hurt. He knows the pain. He saw it happen. He saw it happen. And God today wants to show kindness to you. I truly believe that today God is going to be, it's going to be a healing day for you as you experience God's kindness and his healing. See, regardless of what you've been through, this is what I've learned in life. That your destiny, listen to me, your destiny's not tied to anyone who's dropped you. Your destiny's tied to the one who died for you. Come on, somebody. If people walked out of your life, let them walk. If people cut you off, let them cut you off. If people have hurt you, then you work through the pain. But I'm here to tell you that your destiny's not tied to anyone who has dropped you. Your destiny's tied to the person of Jesus Christ. He's the one who died for you. And until my friend dies for me, I'm going to allow him to walk away. That's right. Some of you just need him to walk away. Say that with me. Walk away. Let him walk away. Some of you just need to let them walk away, because as much as they said they loved you, they ain't died for you. And there's only one who's died for you. And his name is Jesus. And this is what he promised. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. I will never drop you. I will never cut you off. I will never let you go. Even though you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you will fear no evil because you are with me, David said. God is with us. He's a friend that sticks closer than the brother, scripture tells us. Your destiny's not tied to what you have lost. Woo. Your destiny is tied to the person of Christ. I had to learn that. I had to learn that. In ministry and church world, people come and people go. And then I realized it happens in the real world too. Yeah. People come and people go in the real world. But I thought when they came to church, I thought they were supposed to stay here forever because I'm such an amazing pastor. Like, who is better than me? Who's better than us? By the way, who's better than this worship team, by the way, right? Come on, like, really? And I think that no one's supposed to leave me or leave. And for many years, I've been pastor 23 years. In the early years, I used to think that when they left the church, they left me. And I had to realize they're not leaving me. They just left the church. Make sense? Yes. And sometimes it's good that they left. Sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's not good. But regardless of why people leave, my destiny's not tied to anyone who leaves. My purpose is found in Jesus Christ. And the purpose of this church, Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Who's building this church? Jesus. So let's get back. So your destiny is not tied. So what do you do when others set you back. And here, I got to go through this quickly. I'm running out of time. But here, we have some parallel stories going on, because what you don't realize is that David also experienced incredible relational setback. From who? King Saul. King Saul chased David down for years and wanted to kill him. David had to hide from caves. King Saul didn't send him nasty texts. He threw spears. King Saul threw real spears at David, wanting to kill David. And there were multiple times that David had a chance to kill Saul, but David refused to touch God's anointed one. So there's David running for his life. And now David's in the palace. Come on, your destiny's not tied to what others do to you. Come on, somebody. Your destiny's not tied. You see, God destined David to be the king regardless of what anybody was doing to him. He finally was promoted to the palace, and now he has an opportunity to show kindness. And he says, is there anyone alive in Saul's household? Isn't that incredible? Not Jonathan, but Saul. What do you do when you've been hurt? What do you do when you've experienced a relational setback? Just show kindness. Can we do that? Can we just show kindness? Don't be like others, but show kindness. Show kindness. Look at what the scripture says. What does it say, church? It says, what would the world look like if we were just kind to one another? Be kind, tender-hearted. What's the second thing he talks about? Paul says here, forgiving. What do you do when you experience a relational setback? You forgive. How do you get rid of the crutches? You show kindness. You forgive. Forgiveness is not for them. Forgiveness sets you free. Forgiveness is for you. It's not for them. It's for you. If you don't forgive, this is your lot in life. This is what you'll be walking through in life. So I refuse to forgive. I'm not going to forgive them. Until they come to me and ask for forgiveness, I am not forgiving them. And if that's you, this is you. Coming to church, I ain't forgive nobody. I don't care what they done to me. I don't care what pastor said. They ain't forgive me. I'm forgiving them. When they come to my house, they come to my front door and said, I forgive me, then I'll think about forgiving them. Forgive. Look at what scripture says. Look what Jesus said. He said, love your enemies. Do you hate that verse? There are verses. I'm going to do a series called The Verses I Hate. This is one. I hate that verse. And that's not enough. He says, do good to those who hate you. Really? Just say love your enemies. I could deal with that. But don't do good. And then he goes further. Bless. No, I ain't going to bless. I ain't going to do good. You see what I'm saying? See what's happening to you when you hold on to that bitterness? Bless those who curse you. And what? Pray. What does God want you to do? You got to be good. You got to bless. You got to pray. And listen, you can't be mad at somebody that you keep praying for. Well, I should say it this way. You can't stay mad at somebody you keep praying for. Prayer is not so much about God changing them. It's about God changing you. How do you get rid of the crutches? You show kindness, you forgive, you're good, you love, you pray. That's what David understood. He understood that you show kindness to your enemies. He understood you bless your enemies. He understood you pray. So that's why he summoned Mephibosheth. Let's pick up the story. Where is Mephibosheth? Where is he? He's in Lodabar. Lodabar. Go get him. I'm here to tell you today that God is declaring over your life. He's sending a word to pull you out from the place that you've been spending this past few years in. God is sending a word right now and is calling you out of Lodabar. No pasture, no thing, no communication. I believe with my whole heart, God is calling you out of Nothingville. And he's going to restore you. And he's going to heal you. So God calls
Mephibosheth. And just imagine with me for the moment as Mephibosheth just kind of walks into the palace. And he's full of fear because he knows he's Saul's grandson. And he knows that he could be a threat to the kingdom of David. He thought he would die. And he comes to the scene and he drops, or maybe he crawled to that place, and he drops and he sees King David, and out of respect, he goes, "Here is your servant." And David goes, "Mephibosheth, because of the promise I made to your father, Jonathan, I'm going to show you kindness." And Mephibosheth is looking up and he's like, "What do you mean, show me kindness? Haven't you seen me? Can't you see my condition? Can't you see what I've been through in life?" And he says it like this. Go to the next verse. Go to that last one. One more. There you go. He says, Mephibosheth bowed. He says, "Who is your servant that you should show kindness to a dead dog like me?" Imagine. Mephibosheth wasn't a dead dog. Mephibosheth was a king's kid. Mephibosheth had royal blood flowing through his veins. Mephibosheth was an heir to the throne. Yet in his mind, he can only think dead dog. And I'm here to tell you that I know you've been through so much stuff in life, and I know you're thinking this is my lot in life, and I know that you're thinking I'm supposed to spend the rest of my years in Lodabar, but I'm here to tell you, you're not a dead dog. You're a child of the Most High God. You have royal blood flowing through your veins. You are a king's kid. Regardless of what anything or anyone has done to you, it doesn't change the fact that you have royalty flowing through you. And there is Mephibosheth, royalty, and all he could think of is dead dog. David said, "That's okay. You're not a dead dog. As a matter of fact, this is what I'm going to do for you, Mephibosheth. I'm going to restore everything you have lost." And I'm here to declare to you today that God is going to restore everything you've lost. So I'm going to restore everything you lost. And not only am I going to restore everything that belonged to him and his family. Go to the next verse for me. Everything in his family. This is what I'm going to do. 2 Samuel, hit the next verse for me, guys. "You and your servants are to farm the land for him, produce the food for your master's household, but Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, will eat at my table." Crippled individuals were never allowed into the palace, not even at the king's table. And this is what David declares over Mephibosheth. He says, "David, I'm going to restore to you everything you've lost, and I'm going to put you back at a position of royalty where you belong. And you don't have to work for anything anymore. My household, this household, Ziba's household, my household will provide everything you need. You just gotta sit at my table." So there is Mephibosheth, overwhelmed. And David said, "I have a seat for you. This is the king's table. This is my table." So there's Mephibosheth, dead dog, me. Dead dog, me. I get to sit there. You mean I don't have to go through life trying to figure out how I'm going to eat? You mean I don't have to go through life living in Lodabar? You mean that table's for me? And I know some of you have been hurt and you're crawling through life. And I know it's been hard. But God is saying, I have a table prepared for you. in the presence of my enemies. You've done this for me, God. I've been through so much. I've been through so much. I've been through so much pain. Mephibosheth, take a seat at the table. And I don't deserve a seat at the table. Take a seat. You're a king's kid. You're a child of the Most High God. This is where I belong. At the palace. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. Even though I walk through the valley, most difficult, darkest valley, I fear no evil because you are with me. Your rod and your staff comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And there is Mephibosheth. There is Mephibosheth. You know what's awesome about this table? The table covers my shame. The table covers my disability. The table covers my pain. Come on, somebody. The table covers. The table restores me. The table heals me. The table places me back in a position of honor. And now I'm seated with the king. I'm seated with the household. And you know what? You know what's amazing? We all look alike. You can't see my disability. You can't see my pain. And I declare over you today, that's exactly what God is going to do for you. He's going to restore you. He's going to heal you. And he's going to restore everything that you've lost. Because he's an awesome God. And you're not going to need these anymore. When you find the healing of Jesus, I don't need these anymore. Because I learn. I need to forgive. I gotta let go. I gotta trust again. I gotta bless. And every time I bless, and every time I forgive, and every time I love, here you go. I find healing. And that means I don't need these anymore. I can walk through life healed. And whole, maybe a little bounce in my step. Oh yeah, I might have a limp. Some of us walk with a limp, and that's okay. But my limp is a cool limp. Yeah, I got through the pain. I got through the hardship. Come on, get up on your feet. I got through the difficulty. I might have a limp, but it's a cool limp because God has restored me and God has healed me and God has blessed me and God has put me back at the table of his blessing. Surely goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life and I will dwell in a house forever. That is your destiny. The table's your destiny. Your destiny is not Lodabar. Your destiny is the palace. So this is how I want you. This is what I want you to do. I want you to say, Lord, what do I need to do to get rid of these crutches in my life? Because they have been crutches. Haven't they been a crutch? Your unforgiveness has been a crutch. Your gossip has been a crutch. That those things have been crutches in your life. God is saying, I want you to forgive. I want you to let go. I want you to show kindness. I want you to be good. I want you to bless. And I know some of you think, oh, it's so hard to forgive. Let forgiveness flow through you before forgiveness comes from you. Say, Lord, I forgive. Or say, Lord, you forgive. Lord, forgive. Lord, forgive. Lord, I forgive. Would you bow your head with me?